Yesterday morning, I decided to set aside the sermon that I had planned for today. All week long, following the tragic death of comedian and actor Robin Williams, I found myself time and time again being drawn back to not only this story, but to the issue of depression and how it appeared in this case to have played a major role in his suicide. Therefore, with some sense of urgency, I felt it necessary to address this at this pertinent time. And I've entitled this sermon, Depression. Let's talk about it. And as a scriptural text, I've chosen just part of the story known as the Gerasene demoniac from Luke 8:26-30. Luke 8:26-30. The disciples arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As Jesus stepped out on land, a man of the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the wilds. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. Those who suffer from the illness of depression are increasingly finding it a less shameful secret that they keep to themselves and have sometimes kept from themselves. Far too many people, however, are still afraid of the social stigma associated with acknowledging that they suffer from depression. But as a society, especially over the last few decades, we have begun discussing depression more openly. And perhaps never as much as this past week, after we learned of the suicide of Robin Williams, who fought depression most of his life. And along with watching a great deal of television news coverage, as I'm sure you may have as well, I've read numerous articles and internet postings this week. And I would guess that many of you have had discussions with family and friends or co-workers about Williams's death, including the topics of depression and suicide. And some of the things that I read appalled me, in that they no longer square with the current medical knowledge and understanding concerning this illness. And some violated the understanding that we have of a loving and compassionate God. There was one blog, however, that I thought best put in perspective these very difficult topics to discuss, depression and suicide, and I will share part of that with you in just a moment. Throughout this past week, we have been rightfully reminded that depression isn't some kind of weakness embedded in one's personality. Rather, it is just one form of mental illness, a medical illness of the brain. And while I've decided not to go into all the statistics this morning, the number of people it is believed to suffer from depression in this country is estimated to be at least 10%, which comes to about 30 million Americans. And a recent study estimates that a staggering 70% of clergy have or are suffering from depression. And for all those who have symptoms of clinical depression, it is thought that a full 80% of these folks are not receiving any medical treatment for their illness. What if 80% of those suffering from cancer or diabetes or Parkinson's or HIV, for example, didn't receive any treatment for their illness? So let's not kid ourselves. Few families or congregations are left unaffected by the illness of depression. So we need to ask, what is the church doing to help? Well, Florence Kraft is a Presbyterian ruling elder and the author of an official Presbyterian Church USA report and resolution entitled "The Church and Serious Mental Illness," which was approved by the 200th General Assembly in 1988. And this is her recommendation, is how the church should respond to those suffering from mental illness. Nobody wants to talk about it. It makes us uncomfortable. As Christians, as Presbyterians, as citizens, we must talk about it. Talk about specific biological illnesses that affect so many adults and even children in this country. Disorders of brain functioning that disrupt faith, will, personality, family, that disrupt the knowledge of truth, of logic, and of one's own true self. We need to talk about mental illness to heighten our awareness of its nature and scope, to enable ourselves to reach out without fear, to become instruments of grace and peace for all those who suffer, to recognize that we are talking about ourselves, our families, our congregations, not some mythical others in the house or church down the street. We know that with the proper medical treatment for mental illnesses, functioning frequently improves, and some people seem to recover completely. But medicine and technology cannot heal socially inflicted wounds. Pills cannot overcome social ostracism, stereotyping, and stigmatizing. Only open dialogue, she writes, and the attitude of inclusiveness can reconcile the fear, uncertainty, even repugnance felt by, quote, normal persons in the presence of those recovering from mental illnesses, and the degradation, fear, hesitancy, doubt, and anger felt by those who have suffered psychiatric labeling. So, in the inclusive view of the Christian community, the church, this church, must provide a safe space of mutual trust and respect that's necessary for open, honest, and frank dialogue. And Mrs. Kraft adds, as Christians, we need to talk about mental illness out of our belief that God's design for all humans is to be born equal in dignity, rights, and freedoms. We know that God intends for us to lead lives of wholeness and fullness. But she continues, individuals with psychiatric labels, their parents, wives, husbands, siblings, or children have seldom been able to find pastoral care or community support with the church, within the church, to enable and sustain them. That is a serious indictment aimed at the church. And I'm afraid that it's more often true than not. So let me return now to that one specific article that I personally found the most useful in helping deal with the aftermath of Robin Williams' death. I found a blog by Daniel Finke, it's F-I-N-C-K-E, on the patheos.com website. Finke has a PhD in philosophy from Fordham University and has taught college classes in ethics and philosophy. And the article is entitled Robin Williams's Verdict on Life. Reading the various lamentations of the suicide of Robin Williams, I'm troubled by the tendency for people to take a single deed to define a man's entire disposition toward life. There is a tendency to frame what happened as Williams losing his battle with depression, or to take his act of suicide as his ultimate verdict on the value of his life or of life itself. But it is neither of these things. Monday, he had a bad day with depression. A lethally bad day. But he had been lucky enough, but had he been lucky enough to survive it, he would have likely regretted it. For most survivors of suicide attempts are glad to be alive. And his judgment, day after day prior, over the course of decades of struggles, was that life was worth enduring even through the blackest nights of addiction and mental illness. And he transmuted his pain into enduring art. Well, after discussing the scope of the particular characters that Williams portrayed in his movies, Fink continues, "Nobody gets out alive. We all die, whatever the cause. But in most places, on most days, everybody gets out alive. No matter how bleak things are for us, most of us live to fight another day. And it's the same for those struggling with depression. Most days, they win. Most days, they endure. Most days, they choose life. My point," he continues, after mentioning that on their darkest days, even the simple act of breathing is an act of hope, his point is that people who struggle with suicide win their lives over and over again. They choose life more often than those who never make living into a question. They survive numerous ledges that their minds push them out onto, managing over and over again not to fall. And we should appreciate what their high wire skills tell us about them and what matters to them. Each time they choose their family, their friends, their life's cause, or even just the next day, it is a choice. It's a choice to continue valuing and to continue giving. And what Robin Williams said in his work over and over again was that life was a mixture of anguish and joy. And eminently worth enduring the anguish for the joy. He spent a lifetime choosing life, preaching life, and spreading life. He won over and over. He lived a great life precisely through bearing the unbearable so long for so well. Day after day, he not only got out alive, he spread life around the globe. And in the end, an illness killed him. Just as illnesses will kill most of us. One day, losing to depression can kill you. But it doesn't mean the entirety of William's inner life was a loss, nor that his ultimate judgment of life was that it was a lost cause. In fact, quite the contrary. Well, it is my hope that we can start an open dialogue about depression. And I want to start this today by modeling it myself. While I have shared this on occasion in church school classes, I have never spoken it from the pulpit. So I'm going out on a limb here by risking being vulnerable, something I hate. I am one of those pastors who suffer from clinical depression. But it has been a struggle for me since I was a teenager. I finally sought help after I had been ordained as a pastor. And after a great deal of fear and trepidation, thinking I was the only one going through this, I visited a psychiatrist. She asked me what I did for a living. And when I told her that I was a pastor, the expression on her face was all but, "Well, duh, no wonder." And all but immediately started writing me out a prescription for an antidepressant. Funny how we do think that sometimes we're the only ones struggling with something. But I have hated to have to be on medication for so long, for about 20 years now. But each time I try to see if I can function without it, I spiral down. And I'm also among those who are well aware of what seems like the utter ridiculousness of not being able to manage even the simplest tasks while in the throes of depression. At times it has been impossible. Most people can't understand that, but impossible to handle simple tasks like opening mail, answering phone messages, cleaning the house, buying a birthday card, or simply shopping for groceries. There were times when a horrible mix of immobilizing paralysis and fearful anxiety took over. And only those who have suffered from clinical depression can truly understand this. So we must remember that depression isn't a lack of happiness. I, for instance, experience happiness and joy, and I'm well aware that I have lots for which to be deeply thankful for. Yet it is easy for others to look at folks like me and judge that it's all just silly, because I have nothing to be depressed about. And that is the cruelty of clinical depression. It's not always based on life situations or circumstances. It's just there. Always. Instead, depression is an attack on the vitality of life. And as you know, we often repeat the mantra here, to live life fully. But I can tell you, I find that very hard to do. Thankfully, I'm in a good place now, but I still struggle. And it took me a long time to understand that this is a medical illness, not a weakness. It took me a long time to understand that this isn't something that I could pray away if I just had enough faith. I know, because I tried that for years. And I wonder how many preachers today, in the aftermath of Williams' death, are telling their congregations that if they just get closer to Jesus, then everything will be all right. Now, I'm sharing this personal information about myself with you today, not in order to elicit sympathy, and certainly not as a cause for worrying about me. Instead, I hope to crack open that door of fear and shame that many of us have about sharing our real selves with one another. And perhaps you or a loved one struggle with depression. If so, let's talk. Perhaps we need to start a support group for depression. But let's trust one another. Let's fight against social stigmas by sharing the very real illnesses that we face. Now, College Hill is already a great community of care and compassion and hope, but we can't really offer that to those who need it most if we are unaware. So may the events of this past week enhance our awareness and our vulnerability, and as always, our compassion. Amen.